listening to the Nerds Assemble podcast.
And welcome to episode 156 of the Nerds Assemble podcast. I'm Paul.
I'm Paul, aka Cookie.
I'm Paul, aka Retroid.
And this week we'll be talking about that Nintendo Direct, because it's probably one of the happier things that's come out this week. What are you saying there, Retroid?
I couldn't resist.
You know what Retro is like with Nintendo? I ain't going to leave you alone.
Oh, it's wicked to mock the afflicted. But I can't help it.
And by the afflicted, you mean me. With Nintendo-itis.
Nintendo fans, yeah.
Bless you.
So I'll quickly run down the different, you know, things that have been announced at the thingy. The biggest one seems to be Final Fantasy VII's Cloud coming to Smash Bros.
I was quite intrigued by that, because I didn't think Square were really supporting Nintendo that much nowadays.
No, I mean,
apart from obviously Final Fantasy remakes on the 3DS.
Yeah, I know that Nintendo have kind of done this... this kind of poll for what characters people want in. So maybe it's come from that, or maybe it's, you know, just behind the scenes kind of stuff, you know, and whatnot.
Yeah.
People are speculating now that, oh, maybe, you know, Final Fantasy VII is going to get a remake on, you know, the NX or something. And it's like, I wouldn't count on it. It'll be nice, but I wouldn't count on it.
Oh yeah, this is true.
So, coupled with that, there's the news that Super Smash Bros. Will have a Nintendo Direct to air in December, which is interesting. Actually, having like a dedicated Nintendo Direct for a game that's been out for, you know, quite a while now.
I'm just a bit baffled by that myself, but go on.
Yeah, unless
that,
like...
that me wasn't being snarky. That is, I am genuinely a bit baffled as to why they'd have one dedicated to one game.
That's
maybe it's
been out for,
because
yeah.
there's a Yeah. Big jump. Gonna do a big announcement.
Maybe they'll use it as a way of pushing digital purchases. Who knows?
At this point, it would be speculation. So
yeah, I'm guessing, and it's like Nintendo and the internet. Lol.
Yeah. Okay, so the new Legend of Zelda will be coming to the Wii U in 2016. Still. So no new real kind of news on that, but they did like a, you know, 10-second kind of bit on it, which, you know, quite nice.
Yes, it's still coming on Wii U.
Yep. So Twilight Princess HD has been confirmed, and it's also going to have like amiibo functionality that will work with the new Zelda game that when it comes out.
It should be cool.
No idea how they're actually going to fit, you know, the amiibo figurine into the... into, you know, Twilight Princess, but if they can, you know, I mean, I quite like the added features that came with Wind Waker HD, you know, being able to kind of send messages in bottles and you know, kind of take photos and selfies and, you know, post them and stuff like that. That was quite cool. So Star Fox Zero is now slated for release in April.
Does that mean they're a lot of time to finish it?
Sorry?
Yeah, they did need time to finish it, didn't they, after looking at it last time? We seem to, anyway.
I was seeing you know, real Nintendo fans looking at it and really,
it didn't look very impressive to me. Anyway,
well,
I like Star Fox stuff, so yeah, I was looking at that and thinking that's because it isn't it kind of a sort of a budgety release.
Budgety.
As in, they've said that, you know, they'll try and get more games out by doing them in a shorter time and for a lower RRP.
It's possible, but I mean, in the end, you know, you don't kind of buy a Nintendo console for the graphics. The question is, did it look fun?
You say that, but I am an old bastard, so I can't remember when I did buy Nintendo machines for the
Come game. On, you still tinker with the Spectrum. Come on.
Just because I've got two.
What's on the Spectrum?
You know, broken open, two broken Spectrums that I'm trying to fix.
But I don't get this ideology of, you know, graphics.
Ideology. But,
well, it's kind of the... I suppose it's more like value system, or you know, something that how you like value graphics, like with you know, kind of PC and you know, whatnot.
Yeah. Well, if I was 100% graphics all the time, then I would only, I mean, and I'm digging myself a hole here because I was saying I would only ever buy you know, a PC and you know, and that. At the moment, I don't have any other consoles. I don't have Xbox, PS4, or Wii U at the moment. But that's just because I don't see the point. Enough exclusive PS4 and Xbox, and also the hardware is not as good. So why would I bother? Why would I get anything? You know, that's in a multi-platform because it will cost me more, and it will look worse. Whereas with the Wii U, it's like, but that's an old argument. When it comes down to that, it is just it's a price thing. I don't really care if there are multi-format games are coming out on Wii U or whatever Nintendo you know there is, because as you say, you don't buy Nintendo machines for the multi you know platform games.
No. Well, I said that you don't buy them for the graphics, but I know sometimes they, you know, the gameplay can be slightly different. So it's kind of interesting to have like extra elements. But
as a kind of you know sideways jump here, I recently watched there was a Digital Foundry on the new Tomb Raider.
Okay.
Oh yeah.
Which is on, which is the Microsoft exclusive at the moment, as in it's only coming out on Xbox One. And I'd completely forgotten about this, Xbox 360.
Oh,
yes.
Yeah, I had completely forgotten it was coming out on Xbox 360 because all the coverage has been Xbox. And Digital Foundry did it. I know they're trying to push it, aren't they? But they did a side by side comparison of the 360 and the Xbox One. And the 360 version, considering this is now a machine which is 10 years old, so you are talking about quite old hardware here, it looked pretty damn fine.
There's still a lot of juice left in it, I think.
Yeah, it is the same game, mostly the exact same environment, or a few places it's just oddly decided to remove... In one place, there's a pool of water. There's a small pool of water, and they've replaced it with completely dry earth, or rather, in this case, snow. On the 360 version, but you know, by and large, it looks good. And you know, they're saying if you played the other ones on 360 and such, it's more than worth it. But that's an example of. Yeah, it might be old hardware, but it can still do well in the right hands.
Definitely. It's because they took the time on it.
Yeah. So I just
weren't rushing it.
A bit odd because it's, well, you've done a version on 360 because obviously you want the money. But
yeah.
But getting back.
You're not exactly providing a good, incentive to upgrade.
Getting back.
The segue made sense in my head. Shut up.
So Paul, getting back on topic.
Less powerful hardware, it can can still perform and can still do well.
Can still make it. So Mother 3 is apparently getting a Wii U release in Japan only. More free content.
Good old Japan.
Yeah. More free content on the way for Splatoon, more Amiibo figures.
Japan.
Wii U bundle coming with Smash Bros and Splatoon will be available Black Friday.
£230, isn't it?
Something like that, but I think the games come pre-installed, so you don't actually get the discs.
So you can't
It also means that because, I mean, both of those, I believe they're kind of fairly memory-heavy games as well, yeah. Which I would imagine wouldn't leave much DLC. Room. Yeah, I would imagine they'll leave much room for, you know, other stuff on the, you know, Wii U.
Saying that, so, those are probably the best games too out for the Wii U, aren't they?
Well, yes and no. I mean, there are some other quite ace ones. I mean, Mario Maker, I still absolutely love.
Oh, yeah, but if you're just after sort of the exclusives that are really popular.
I think those are two of the more popular ones, yes.
You're not going to commit to this answer, are you?
Not really, because, I mean, you know, there is Mario Kart 8.
Okay. Metroid, what do you think?
Well, personally, I couldn't give a toss about Smash Brothers. I am mildly interested in Splatoon because it looks quite nice. I like some of the gameplay videos.
It looks quite cool. I like the idea.
However, pre-launch, they were at the Eurogamer Expo, and they were holding, you know, like, tournaments. And I wanted to kill them until they were very dead.
What? What? Why is that?
Because they were shouting and they kept turning up their sound system on their stand.
Right, okay.
And that wasn't just my imagination, because I didn't say anything about this. And I was at the Frontier stand because they were doing Elite Dangerous. That year, which is when they sold me the game.
Yeah.
About, you know, 4 minutes on it, I'll be buying that then. And the bloke who was plugging me into the Oculus Rift and such, you know, said about the, you know, Patreon or the Splatoon stand, the been single day we've been here.
Okay. But so would you say a better bundle would have been Mario Kart 8 and Splatoon?
I would have liked something like that.
Would that have got you interested?
Also, to me, Mario Kart 8 and Splatoon are very different games, whereas when it comes to in the Smash Brothers and Splatoon, I just think that's too multiplayer focused.
Yeah, nice.
I mean, yes, I know you've got multiplayer on, you know, but it's always been a series that you can just play. And you can play it multiplayer if you want.
Yeah. Okay, so Nintendo, you've heard it here first. If you want Retroid to buy a Nintendo Wii U, bundle it with Mario Kart 8 and
also
Splatoon.
£100 price cut.
What was that?
£100 price cut.
£100?
Yeah.
So, what would that knock it into?
To be fair, that entirely also applies to Sony and Microsoft as well.
Yeah.
I think pretty much all the consoles are still too expensive, but yeah.
Saying that, I was in Tesco's at the weekend. Don't worry, Paul, this is on topic. They had the Nintendo. They had the Nintendo 2DS for £49.
Wow,
which isn't bad, even considering you're getting a 2DS for that.
Oh no, because you can still play all the 3DS titles on it, can't you?
I know, but
it's, yeah, without a 3D effect.
Yeah, but that gives me headaches anyway, so.
Watch our new Technicolor widescreen movie on a 4x3 black and white film. And so, well, gee, that sounds so tempting.
Yeah, but I thought that was a really good price for them.
That is a good price for a 2DS. I'm trying to be generous.
Okay, I'm going to push it back on. Super Mario Maker is getting a browser-based portal to make searching for levels easier, so you're going to be able to search via kind of tags and stuff, so that's if you so only cool. want to play, like, Auto Mario levels or something like that, then, you know, you can search that.
I have a few friends who play Mario Maker, and they swear by it.
Oh, it is good, and, you know, I was kind of a little
how
bit...
How can you possibly screw that up? It's golden. The entire idea of a Mario game that you can make your own levels in. That's a really good idea. And it just puzzles me why it's taken them so damn long.
There's a Did You Know video on YouTube about, you know, kind of how Mario Maker came about and whatnot. It seems like, you know, people have been wanting it for a while. And apparently it actually started off as, you know, a tool for them to actually just, you know, making new Mario games.
Oh, cool.
So, you know, they opened it up and bam. But yeah, that's obviously slight getting updated as well. I was a bit concerned when it first released that it wouldn't have any updates, but I'm kind of glad that they are slowly, you know, updating it. So, say for example, you know, adding in checkpoints and whatnot.
Hang on, it didn't have checkpoints.
Not to begin with, but now it does.
That's a bit little bit weird considering the date back to Super Mario World on the SNES.
There's several different things that you know, presumably they had to specifically program for when they originally made like stuff like, you know, Super Mario World and whatnot. So they've obviously kind of cut down to what its core is, as a just a Mario game, and, you know, release those tools. So I'm kind of hoping that they continue on, like, adding more tools and even, like, adding more kind of, you know, backgrounds and, you know, kind of themes and stuff like that for it.
Yeah. I also appreciate the fact that I knew that fact.
Mm. Okay.
So there. See? I do like Nintendo games.
Okay, so on the 3DS side, we've got Hyrule Warriors Legends, including, you know, new characters like Linkle.
Yay, female Link. She looks like a badass character, to be fair.
A badass character. I was kind of confused because the video footage showed like an introduction type thing, you know, kind of a little bit almost like a story mode type thing. So I'm kind of hoping that, you know, there will be a story mode, but it looked like the graphics were, you know, way better than the 3DS version. So I'm kind of crossing my fingers that, you know, Hyrule Warriors will actually get an update on the Wii U.
And if not, will you be buying it for 3DS so you can play as the extra character?
I'm not 100% sure because, you know, this is the second time that I've been playing it within the space of, you know, about a year or a year and a half.
Yeah, but you're addicted to it, so surely you would be.
Yeah, but I mean, it's going to be, you know, virtually the same game again.
But with new characters and new DLC.
Yeah, and unless there's a specific reason.
Quiet on this bit.
Unless there's a specific reason for, you know, playing it. So say, for example, with, you know, all of the DLC so far with Hyrule Warriors, a lot of it is with the extra kind of adventure modes. Most of it is kind of getting hearts and weapons and whatnot for the existing characters rather than the new ones. Now, I haven't played much of Majora's Mask. Adventure pack type thing. So I'm not 100% sure whether there's kind of heart pieces for Young Link, Tingle, and you know, adult Midna, or, you know, real Princess Midna. But yeah, it kind of doesn't make me want to play as those characters because I won't actually get rewarded for, you know, kind of playing as them.
So what happens if they announce by playing the 3DS version, there's going to be exclusive content that then becomes unlockable for the Wii U version?
If they did that, then I probably would play it. If.
So, Nintendo, but that's another sales pitch for you. My name and address is available online.
Are you a secret Nintendo rep?
You know, I think I heard Miyamoto say, treat them mean, keep them keen.
Ooh, ouch! Retroid!
What? It's just that surely Nintendo wouldn't resell the same game on a slightly different platform in a short amount of time. They wouldn't do a thing like
that. Every other fucking manufacturer does.
Well, yeah, I think that's part of the problem, you know, with Nintendo that I would even kind of acknowledge the criticism of and support it, is the fact that, you know, they've previously kind of gone on record and saying that they don't support, you know, kind of adding, you know, having like an unfinished game and like selling the little bits extra, you know, and they kind of have been doing that sometimes anyway.
Hmm. Well, unfortunately, it's a little bit profitable, isn't it? By the way, if you hear a cat again, then
that's all right.
Yeah, there we go. As if on cue. Hey, Callie.
I mean, I kind of understand to a certain extent that, you know, DLC isn't quite what people kind of think. It's usually a case of the game is finished and then they are still kind of continuing development on not just kind of bugs and fixes and whatnot, but also extra content in order to, you know, kind of expand the game, as it were. But even so, sometimes it's a little bit, yeah.
Hmm. In some ways, I prefer the kind of that you've seen on iOS and Android, where they will sell, you know, the base game, but they'll keep adding content and tweaking So it still sells, but of course that's because it's the App Store.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, Nintendo wouldn't really be able to do that because, you know, they wouldn't have as many people kind of buying the new, new that they can actually sell to.
Yeah, what they might do with the NX.
We won't go into that.
We'll see.
I'm kind of cautiously hopeful for it, but that's because, you know, yeah.
I'm being very cautious with that because I don't trust them to do a proper upgrade, new machine.
I mean, I'd be more excited by the prospect of third-party developers actually getting more in on the Nintendo action.
Yeah, no, it would be nice to see them getting back onto...
But that is...
Back in with other people like...
The vicious circle, isn't it? Because look at Ubisoft. They weighed in on the Wii quite heavily, and they paid dividends for them. You know, the bloody
Just Dance. But,
all of that kind of thing, and then they tried the same thing on the Wii U, and didn't.
Well, they actually went in with some very more sort of adult and toyed games, didn't they? With Zombie U and Assassin's Creed Black Flag came out on it, didn't it? In the end.
Assassin's Creed 3 and Black Flag did.
Yeah,
Assassin's Creed 3 and Black Flag.
Okay, so getting back to the thing at hand. So Dragon Quest 7 and 8 getting a 3DS remake, and that's going to the West.
Yay!
Also, was it Final Fantasy something or other?
Final Fantasy Legends or something.
That's the one, yeah.
There you see.
That looks kind of interesting.
You're going to be able to play all the characters in Super Smash Bros.
Fire Emblem Fates coming, with like
Fire Emblem,
several different packages and whatnot. And I've never really played a Fire Emblem game. I might like it, might not. I'm not sure, but yeah.
Fire Emblem is really good. I really enjoyed that.
Yeah, there's wireless enabled versions of Pokemon Red, Blue, and Yellow coming to 3DS. I think that's going to be a big hit with people.
I'm slightly surprised that they haven't done something like that already.
Yeah.
I would have thought that one of the things they would have done, with the DSi, which never got, very well supported.
Funny you should say that, because it just reminded me that Twilight Princess and the HD remake apparently is actually being done by an Australian kind of team. So they're obviously kind of outsourcing the HD remake.
Right.
So a bit like what happened with Ocarina of Time 3DS, where that was kind of outsourced.
Okay.
So, there's Zelda Triforce Heroes getting free DLC in December. Pokemon Picross is a free-to-start game launching early December.
To me, free to start sounds a little bit more ominous than free to play.
Yeah, in a way, but I mean, it's a bit like the EA access thingy that Cookie was talking about earlier on, where it's basically you can play the the game for like a certain amount of time first, and then you kind of have to play if you like it, and you can kind of continue on stuff.
It's a little bit like shareware.
Yeah. Oh yeah, yeah, shareware. Blimey, that's going back.
One of the most examples of shareware was the original Doom.
Yeah.
Where it had three episodes to start off with, but they only gave you the first episode, which was quite a chunk of game, really. I mean, it was a few hours that, you could play about with. In a way, free. And then once you finished that, it came up saying, blah, 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 call us and such, buy the other two.
Buy the license.
Yeah, buy the license, and you can download the full version and play that. And,
it's actually called an unlock key at that time, wasn't it? I think, rather than license.
Yeah. Well, it wasn't so much an unlock key in the days of the internet at that point. It was going to cost a fortune to give you the full game, and of course they always thought if we give you the full game, then some bugger's just going to hack it.
Yeah, exactly.
So just give you the first chunk, and then you can get the other two.
But
and of course, it worked.
One of the things
I think that's quite a good model to just let your player for a little bit, and then say if you want to if you want to continue or, you know, get further, go on.
Okay, but one of the things that I wanted to discuss is basically about the kind of whole business, not business model per se, but, you know, the whole strategy of Nintendo Directs and how they're kind of put together and whatnot. So, you know, obviously kind of speaking directly to the, you know, consumer, it's kind of nice in a way, I feel, anyway.
It is nice. It's nicely put together, and it's always got quite a bit of content in there as well, which is cool.
Yeah, it's a bit of a show type thing.
It is, yeah. And it does, it's become more of an event now as well, isn't it?
Mm.
You know, you can pretty much, when is it, every 4 months or something, or every 3 months?
Well, there's no kind of regular date. I think it's basically just when they've got kind of enough to, you know, kind of push out or announce type thing.
This will be the third one this year so far, isn't it? Or is it more?
Yeah, they took quite a break after Iwata's death.
Mm.
So, but they've got another one coming next month. So,
yeah,
and they seem to like doing it for, you know, kind of you know, their particular kind of heavy, well, say heavy games. Their you know, their bigger titles as well. I mean, Hyrule Warriors had one before its launch, which did obviously get people hyped for it.
I'm just thinking there with you saying about heavy games. So it would be like Super Mario Zeitgeist. Legends of Zelda on Wii. And Super Smash Bros. Existential Crisis.
I think there is an existential crisis in that.
Why do we fight? Do we fight? Is that all we do?
No, I do like the format. And I like how they've approached it. And it is... It's refreshing to see something like that as well. Because the other, you know, Sony and Microsoft haven't bothered. They're still using E3 and that sort of thing to showcase their
I think part of the reason behind that is, though, is that a lot of Microsoft and Sony's bigger titles may come from at least second or third party developers.
Mm.
So, you know, that would kind of mean that you'd have to get stuff ready from third-party developers to show. So I think, in a way, Nintendo's in a unique position to do that. Even though Nintendo does sometimes kind of announce, like, third-party stuff, or mention it, at least. So, and
Can I just jump in there?
Yeah, sure.
Say that, you know, Microsoft haven't really bothered about this. Microsoft were bothering, and then they fired a lot of the staff that were doing it, apart from Major Nelson.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah,
and especially in the US, Sony, when they released, when they first started PlayStation Plus, in an effort to try and justify it to people, they were doing it was at least monthly, but it was a sort of inside access. You know, it was a inside PlayStation, or it was, you know, something like that.
Yeah. Which is kind of a bit of a problem, because I mean, gaming as a whole has kind of had this perception that it's quite insular. So having like an insider access kind of reinforces that.
For instance, of, you know, selling anything like that when it's promoting your brand and the products, and why are you charging me for it?
Yeah.
It's just, you know, it makes no real sense for me with the, you know, the PlayStation thing, whereas at least with the Major Nelson thing, and because it was, let's see, it was Mr. Pointyhead and the other one who's slightly beardy who do outside Xbox.
Mm.
Now, so outside Xbox, which, you know, if anyone hasn't, you know, watched it or heard of it, Eurogamer often, you know, push them up as well, and they do sort of, you know, takes on gaming, and they are quite good. But of course, they started off as, several of them started off as employees of Microsoft, and they just got
axed. Yeah, it was actually called Inside Xbox.
Yeah, so that's hence the name. It's now Outside Xbox, because they're side.
No, you're quite right. I'd forgotten about that.
Yeah,
they did quite good things, and I used to listen to the Major Nelson podcast while I was playing on the 360, because that was one of the things I always liked. You know, pop it on a USB stick and just listen to it while you're playing. You know, in my case, I was playing Oblivion and Shivering Isles on it, I mean, listening to, you know, various podcasts, and it worked quite well. But yeah, I think Nintendo do it slicker.
It's not just that,
more focused.
I think not doing it would affect them more because they've already got this perception that the Wii U has no games. So by having Nintendo Directs filled to the brim with games, you know, it kind of challenges that idea. And second of all,
Mr. Cookie Uma about that?
I was just thinking the main list, like from last week, was generally 3DS games, wasn't it?
There was a lot of 3DS games, but by the same token, there were quite a few Wii U games.
DLC though, weren't there? Apart from Legend of Zelda Remake HD thingamajig,
Star Fox, yeah.
And the rest of the add-ons and DLC.
True. Although some of the 3DS stuff were, you know, eShop and, you know, add-ons and stuff as well, so.
Sorry.
That's right. Second of all, I think...
It wasn't me that time.
That's right. So, second of all, I think it actually humanizes the heads up in, you know, Nintendo as well, you know, because you had kind of Iwata kind of presenting, you had Sakurai, you know, actually kind of doing, you know, his, you know, one for Smash Bros. You've got Reggie Fils at AM coming on, you've got, what is it, Doody from Nintendo Treehouse.
Mm.
Trent Easton? Yeah, so you have like all these kind of big players in Nintendo actually coming forward and being kind of forward facing, which is quite unusual for a company as well. I mean, you had the head dude from Sony and a couple of other dudes, but they never seemed kind of necessarily approachable per se.
Now you say that, and who's one of the top guys in Sony?
Hiraz?
The other one. I know, I'm being...
This is kind of proving the point, though, in a way.
But the other one... Helpful, Paul, very helpful, do your research. I've seen him appear on, you know, one or two other things, and in one sort of little YouTube thing, I saw him sit down with... a game developer and the host of a...
Hello?
Hello?
I thought he was having time to think then. I think he is. I think we've lost him.
I think he's gone on Google.
No, call has dropped, unfortunately. Yeah.
Sony did not want that name mentioned, obviously.
Sony's just listening into this and she's nope. Not saying
terminate
that.
Before the name is mentioned. Terminate now.
Yeah, but I mean, it feels like the heads of Nintendo are more celebrity based.
They're a lot more in front of you, aren't they?
Yes.
Yeah, they are. They're not sort of hidden away like they used to be.
Mm.
So, but then that's a good step for Nintendo because they always did seem a bit to be shrouded in secrecy up at the top.
Yeah, and I think that's another reason for these Nintendo Directs because they really love to control the flow of information going from them to the consumer.
Absolutely.
And you can tell by, you know, when things get leaked and stuff, you know, and Nintendo kind of goes a little bit crazy sometimes.
Yeah, they can.
Yeah,
I think any company can, though, if it's something to
true
does affect them.
True, but you by know, the same
especially
token,
especially if they've been working hard to get something out there beforehand.
Oh, definitely, and you know, it's like what is it, Ryu? When you know, before he was announced, you know, that got leaked because you know people were kind of looking through the, you know, I can't remember whether it was information on the disc or information on, you know, the download or whatnot, or one of the updates, and they saw, you know, files relating to Ryu. So, you know, that got leaked and whatnot. And it's kind of amazing how they managed to avoid that happening with Cloud.
Yeah.
But presumably they learned their lesson.
Oh, absolutely. But I was quite shocked to see Cloud, actually.
Oh, definitely.
I mean, Square Enix, apart from the Final Fantasy bits, they haven't really been changing their sort of... what's the word? they haven't really been supporting that supportive of Nintendo generally.
Are you dying, Cookie? You seem to be going down in call quality.
Is that better?
Not really.
Excellent stuff. Skype's doing well tonight.
Yeah.
No, but the Square Enix don't seem to support them as much as they used to.
What, Nintendo?
Nintendo.
Mm.
Apart from Final Fantasy.
Yeah, well,
remakes and that sort of thing.
And Dragon Quest. Although that's obviously...
Yeah, and Dragon Quest, yeah. That's but it's even then, it's the earlier Final Fantasies. Like most of the ones you've seen on the 3DS, been on the 3DS and that, really, to be fair.
Yeah.
With stuff like Final Fantasy 1, 2, 3, and that sort of thing.
Mm.
So, like, you got Final Fantasy 7 on the Wii U, which would, I think would do really well on the Wii U.
I'm...
And the 3DS.
Yeah, because I remember, you know, a while ago, you know, part of the reason why... that Final Fantasy VII never actually came to any other consoles apart from the PlayStation was, I believe they had like a contract with Sony saying that it would be at least a console exclusive. So, you know, you managed to get a PC
wasn't it?
Yeah.
And PlayStation. And that was, I think that was one of the first turning points of Square Enix where they got really close with Sony.
Mm. Definitely, definitely.
Fairness. You know, so it'll be interesting to see what happens with Cloud being in it.
Mm.
See if actually using that character will open up a bit doors for them.
Yeah, and the one thing that, you know, I love about the Smash Bros. Series is when they actually bring in characters from other franchises, they're actually being authentic to their moveset. So if you look at Ryu, he's got all of Ryu's moves. They're not just kind of made up on the fly. And same with Cloud, you know, if you look closely, you know, there's a lot of different references to his moveset in Final Fantasy VII.
Yeah, they've done the homework well, though, haven't they? And that's something Nintendo does get right a lot of the time. They do show the respect to the characters they use, which is nice.
Mm.
You know, that is one of the nicer things. If they do start using... I mean, when Sonic first appeared on Nintendo, everybody just thought, oh, here we go. But
can you hear me now?
Aha,
hello,
aha.
He's back. Oh, Sony haven't stopped him. Sony have not stopped him. He's back.
What happened, Retroid? I've
been shouting at a tablet.
You've been shouting at the tablet?
Yes. I've been interesting, witty, funny, insightful things, you know, as usual. And no bastard's been responding.
Sorry. We couldn't hear you.
I don't know why you disconnected me, but how much of the little thing, you know, the description of the video that I saw the other guy from Sony in, how much of that did you hear before it cut off?
Probably not much. Whoa, what's going on?
Whoa.
That's pretty oddness because I've had to disconnect my headset.
Ouch.
But right, the whole thing was right, I'll just turn it down so hopefully it doesn't feedback as much. There was an interview with Rami Ismail, who's the developer behind things like Nuclear Throne.
Mm.
And it was Sohei Yoshida. It was the who was the high up Sony guest who was on the the video, but yeah, if you look it up, it's Hot Pepper Interview Nuclear Throne.
Okay,
so you get to see a top business bloke from Sony eating a hot pepper and then trying to speak in his second language, which is English.
Okay,
but that's a way to do it. So, yeah, let's see Miyamoto do that.
Cool. Oh, no. But I know that Iwata had, like, the Iwata Asks, you know, kind of videos where they, you know, kind of chatted with developers of different, you know, titles and about stuff.
Yeah.
I never watched many of those. But, you know, I do find the Nintendo Directs quite, you know, interesting. And that they seem to, you know, kind of have like a good one every now and again. Then you'll get hype for the next one, and it's like, yeah, next one, yeah. Then there'll be a good one again. So not every Nintendo Direct interests me personally, but, you know.
My God.
So you broke up a bit there, Retroid. What did you say?
I said blimey.
Oh dear.
Right, I'm going to try plugging in headphones or something and seeing if that works.
Okay. Cool.
See, because I have no idea why, but my little USB dongle seems to be failing me at the moment.
God bless you.
See, for anyone listening, this is a difference between, you know, our podcast and a lot of others. Is a lot of other podcasts work. For a second there, I thought I was going to stop too long when I said they work. Other podcasts, they work. We don't. No, instead,
go with the flow.
It's not just going with the flow. It's also with our setup. We've kind of customized it and kind of figured out what works for us. And you know, we try to balance you know, between the workload and you know, the content.
Right. How does this sound now?
Oh, that, I think that's sounding good.
Right, good. I've just got the headset part, as in, you know, headphones plugged in, but I've had to resort to using the mic on the tablet.
Okay.
So blame the Nexus 7 if it sounds like a chat.
But yeah, I was explaining to any listeners that you know, our podcast is done so that it's actually all of our voices come through Skype to my computer, which then kind of gets sent through a mixer into a recorder, and that's how we record everything. Other podcasts, they record from each person's end, and then they kind of collate it together to kind of try and get that audio quality up. Whereas, you know, we're not necessarily, you know, worried too much about audio quality, because it's the quality of the content that we're after. And you know, we don't want too heavy a workload as well, because I mean, all of us have got lives going on.
Yeah,
and
I'll speak for yourself. But...
Oh, there's always one. There's always one.
Yeah, it's usually me.
Yeah. We've all got lives going on, and you know, it can take quite a while to, you know, edit it together. So I'm always kind of looking for ways of kind of cutting down on the amount of you know, time that we have to kind of work you know, at this. So which is part of the reason, to a certain extent, why some of the you know, the plans have kind of gone out of the window for Nerds Assemble sometimes. So it far more anarchic, but far more natural. Yeah.
Thank you very much for that safety announcement. Now back to your...
Yeah, I'm Paul Wood.
Normal.
Apologies.
Okay, so what were we talking about again? I think Retroid should answer this one.
Yes, Retroid.
Well, I was talking about people eating chilies.
People eating chilies.
Right, okay.
Cool. And it was Nintendo Direct, and not every single one of them has Mr. Blewett there frothing.
Oh dear. I mean, I've heard you know, kind of terrible things about the Nintendo fan base, and it's like I don't necessarily know what to believe. No, not all of them from you. But, you know, obviously you kind of get, you know, fan bases that kind of go to war with each other, you know, Sonic fans versus Xbox fans versus Nintendo fans versus PC Master Race, you know, blah, 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 blah. You just kind of get sick of it after a while, because most people have at least, you know, a PC and or one or two consoles, if not all three. I mean, from last generation...
I'm just too old for that kind of shit. Yeah. I just know that the Amstrad CPC was crap.
Well, I mean, from last generation, we've got an Xbox 360, we've got a PS3, we've got a Wii, and the reason that we got them, and we didn't get them all at the same time, is because we like video games. It's not because we want to, you know, be real loyal supporters to one console.
Hello?
Hello? Hello? Sorry about that.
Sorry about that, audience, but I had to go and kill somebody for mentioning how crap the Amstrad CPC was. As you all know, I actually had one of them, and that was one of my first gaming computers, and I loved it.
I should never say anything about, you know, anybody's, you know, older first consoles and computers and stuff. Just,
hit they were just that, special like I am.
You never hit anybody in the childhood. Never hit anybody in the childhood. It's just too painful.
Oh, this is true. Exactly. So what did I miss anyway, apart from besmirching my childhood memories?
Well, funnily enough, it wasn't you. I think it was me. As though it was my fault. It was the laptop. For some reason, I'm not sure whether it was the laptop or just the router, but there was a disconnect somewhere along the line. That, you know, obviously sometimes happens because, you know, computers are idiots.
Finicky things.
Oh, they very much are. I mean, I get it when, you know, sort of like, I'm a technology user. I generally tend to be able to kind of orientate myself within technology, you know, somehow. You know,
yeah.
Emily complains at me for not reading the instruction manuals. Usually I can just get on with stuff because I intuitively know, you know. But sometimes it really, really frustrates me when technology fails for no discernible reason.
Yeah, it can be like that, unfortunately. Ooh. Talk of the devil in these shallow eyes.
Right, am I finally bloody back now?
You are finally bloody back.
That's what you get for dissing the Amstrad CPC464. Do not do it again, Retroid, or we'll kick you off again.
So I'll come round to your house and whip a magnet over your entire copy of The Apprentice starring Alan Sugar.
That was good last week.
I wouldn't know, I don't watch it.
I think that's a brilliant segue into what we've been doing, because I think we've done Nintendo Direct pretty much to death.
Yes, okay. Nintendo Direct, keep going.
What?
Yeah, I think Nintendo should keep going with it.
Oh, right.
Keep going with it. And make sure you get Retroid to watch every single one.
Okay, you ever seen that bit from Clockwork Orange?
I was thinking of the exact same bit there. The exact same bit.
I think I'll need some milk plus Melisette. Get
just,
through that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think you're taking your you know, job description as rep for Nintendo way too seriously there, Cookie.
Hey, if they want to offer me a job, I'll be happy. Yeah. I'm here. Just a phone call away.
I've just thought now.
Nintendo. I'll even personally go and deliver a Nintendo Wii U to Retroid and get him playing it. And video
I'm sure
it
you
all.
Wouldn't have any trouble finding one in a shop that's Doctor.
Ouch. Oh, bless.
It's just
why
too
so
easy.
Bitter? Why so bitter, Retroid?
Yeah.
the trick is to laugh with the joke, even though inside you're seething. No, I'm just kidding.
So, moving on.
Yeah, what have you been up to, Cookie?
I have been killing lots of Imperial scum.
And Rebel scum, presumably.
And Rebel scum, yeah.
You've been
on,
killing
Star
scum?
Wars Battlefront. Yeah, on Star Wars Battlefront.
Okay.
I've been playing that on the old Xbox One. And I have to say, I have a new addiction. Call of Duty just ain't going to get a look in anymore. Battlefront all the way. It's just amazing. And the Ray Dice have paid homage to the original movies. It's just excellent. Such as, I was quite surprised to see a level based on the ice caves in Hoth, where the Tauntaun takes Luke. That was pretty cool, running through all the ice caves. On the Forest Moon of Endor level, if you are the Imperials, you do find that the Ewok village is above you, and if you're not careful, Ewoks do start throwing rocks at you. Which is pretty funny.
I was watching a few videos of a friend of mine, and she was playing it with her team, and they were trying to get the Ewoks.
And then on Tatooine, you have the Jawas running to the sand. Oh, I can't remember what you call
castles?
It. Sand sort of. No, the, you know, the big sand dune. Dune Castle. Sand Transporter.
Okay.
They're actually, if you run straight towards the part sort of thing, you can actually see the Jawas running to get away from the gunfire and running between the sort of treads, which is pretty cool. And then you've got the level based around the Tatooine spaceport, where you've got the Millennium Falcon parked in a bay. Just little touches like that, which is brilliant.
The Millennium what?
Falcon.
Falcon. They call it in the films Falcon. You American scum.
No, rebel scum.
Hang on.
Well, if you think about it, the Americans are rebels, aren't they? So.
Oh, you've
got a very long memory.
We apologise on behalf of Retroid to all Americans and Nintendo fans everywhere.
Obviously, if we knew that talking about Nintendo would have this effect on him, we would have got him to take his meds before the show.
If you've been affected by the things that Retroid has brought up.
In fact, it's Alskers from the Swedish cider. Stockholm.
Hmm.
That's right, isn't it?
Obviously not strong enough for you, though.
Well, there's another bottle downstairs. I could always go
there. Carrying on. Yes. Very good modes, gameplay modes on there. Very heavily multiplayer, which was to be expected. But in all honesty, it's one of the most fun multiplayer games I've played for a long time. Definitely. It's just insane. And the space battles are great when you're playing Fighter Squadron as well, which is my favourite mode. Just jumping into an X-Wing on A-Wing and then trying to find the pickup so you can actually pilot the Millennium Falcon or Slave One. Just mind-blowing. It's great.
How's the people that you've played with so far?
They've been all right, actually, yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah. I was actually, on Saturday morning, I was a ringman to somebody who picked up the hero icon and got to pilot the Millennium Falcon. And I've actually got a screenshot, but for some reason I can't upload any screenshots. I'm assuming it's because the game isn't out yet. Mm. I've saved, and I'm actually there with the Millennium Falcon and another X-Wing, all three of us doing a planned attack on one of the escaping Imperial spaceships.
Okay.
So, yeah, the teamwork works because you have to. If you're playing like a Supremacy or especially the Walker attack, whether you're on Hoth and you've got the attacked Walkers and you've got to stop them, you can't win if you don't play as a team. Simple as that. You've got to play as a team.
I don't know, to be honest, with team games that I've played before, sometimes team cohesion can be absolutely terrible. Sometimes it can be really, really good, but it depends on the player. And that's why it does. Best.
It does. I mean, assholes that will just run off.
Yeah. Mm. And well, you still see them on this. To be fair, you still see them on this. But generally, I mean, I have for the first couple of games I played. I'll be honest, because I didn't know the maps that well, and because I wasn't used to the controls when I was flying the X-Wing and stuff. I will admit I was sort of careering off a little bit to do my own thing to learn where stuff was and the maps, as you do. But then once I've actually got to know the maps a bit better and I know where I'm going a bit more, I've got more into that cohesion. People don't tend to talk, but you do get paired up as a partner as well, like you do on Battlefield. So you can actually spawn on your partner, and that's when you die as well, if it's available. And you've always got like a little orange marker for them, so you know exactly where they are and whether they need your help or not.
It sounds very much like the Battlefield.
It is, yeah, but it's Star Wars. You can't help but love Star Wars.
I didn't mean that in a bad way. It's just I like to build games. So, and they work.
They do work, because everybody on there seems to realise you've got to play as a team, which is great.
Okay. Has there been anything else that you're doing, or have you just been playing that constantly?
Been playing that, and obviously watched Doc 2 on Saturday night.
Yeah.
With the Sandmen.
Yeah.
I actually I quite like the concept. It's quite original.
I think it had elements that I liked, but I wasn't completely convinced on it.
I quite liked the camera work as well. With going to the video feeds and that sort of thing.
It's been like most of the recent series where there's been stuff I've really liked, but it's not quite come together.
Not quite there. For me.
Yeah.
For me, it's definitely one of the stronger seasons from the last two or three.
Okay.
With ideas and that, definitely.
Hmm.
Especially compared to last season.
I did particularly like this episode because it was actually sci-fi.
True.
And it wasn't on bloody Earth, and it wasn't in that bloody, bloody school again.
But that's about next week, don't worry.
Jesus.
No, but it has been one of the stronger seasons, definitely.
I think, personally.
I'm in the position that I really like Peter Capaldi as an actor, but I'm really not sure about his Doctor at the moment.
Yeah.
But, I mean, is that because of the writing?
I think it's because of the writing, yes.
Yeah. I mean, if he was given kind of completely different scripts, then, you know, makes me wonder how he would be if he were actually given Matt Smith's script, for example. Or David Tennant's script.
It's like the arse end of Matt Smith's series.
Mm.
As well, they were a bit poor. So I can definitely put it down to, you know, it's the writing, which I'm having issues with.
See, that's why I've actually preferred this season to last season, because the writing, for me, has been a lot stronger.
I do still really like the two-parters. I think that's...
That's worked really well this season.
So I'm very happy with that.
I like the fact that at least like a couple of times we've had it where they could be standalone episodes, just a couple of elements carried from one episode to the other type thing.
Yeah.
Yes.
That's quite good. You know, where it's kind of, they're kind of two-parters, but they can carry out by themselves separately.
Yeah.
What's a face?
What's a face?
Thingy from...
Missy.
No. She would be...
Missy Williams' character.
Osgood. Osgood.
And no! What's a face from Game of Thrones?
Maisie Williams's.
Maisie Williams.
Thank you. Yes, that's it.
Yeah, she's quite an interesting character.
Because they seem to be, you know, they could be entirely separate episodes. They could have been one at the beginning of a season, one at the end of the season, if they, you know, they wanted to.
Yeah.
But they worked because it was just, here's this character going through time her own way.
Mm.
Yeah.
And here's him, he just sort of drops in. Because it's what he does.
I'm looking forward to see if they actually progress her character a bit more.
I think they were meant to have her further on in the series as well.
I think that was the setup of her being on that picture with Clara outside the school.
Mm.
Which would be cool. But I also think after the Zygon episode, I really quite like the idea of Osgood joining the Doctor as a companion.
Yes. But they'd have to somehow resolve the deadlock.
Yes, they would do.
But you could say, if there's two Osgoods, then he would be... You know, if she was travelling with him, then she would be insurance.
Yes. And, of course, there's the whole thing that he can travel back in time, so... He could pick her up and then go back to exactly the same
unless
spot
they decide that they can't, for reasons.
Well, yeah. But there is that option as well. But yeah, I think Osgood or Maisie Williams' character is the next companion.
Mm. It'll be interesting to have a companion that actually kind of pushes the Doctor away from humanity in a way.
Yeah.
You know, the Doctor it's would have to be... Yeah, the Doctor would have to be closer to humanity than the immortal child. Or, you know, mortal girl type thing. 'Cause that
just sod it. Stick Missy in the TARDIS with him.
Now, I do like the idea
I'd like to see more Missy.
Missy's cool.
Yeah, I mean, the end of last season was a bit like, meh, with Missy, but the beginning of this season with Missy has been, you know, quite good.
Yeah, definitely.
But she's not maybe necessarily immoral, she's more amoral.
Yes, she just doesn't have morals rather than being anti-moral.
Yes.
So that makes sense.
Which is cool. So that's basically what I've been up to.
Okay. Retroid?
Retroid? I have mostly been playing Fallout 4.
Okay, yep, good. How have you been finding it so far?
Quite good.
Only quite good.
I've easily... Well, it is more Fallout, which to me is not an issue.
Right.
And it looks a lot nicer, obviously. And the main character is voiced now, which, you know, makes a difference to, you know, some people. Mm. And you've now got the base system where you can, you know, build things up and you can collect resources and, you know, build quite relatively complicated settlements with, you know, electrical systems and switches and detectors and, you know, things like that. I've only really scraped the surface of that. So it feels more like, you know, more like a different game than, you know, Fallout 3 and New Vegas did, right, as an example. They felt very, very similar. Which, again, is no bad thing, because I liked both of those. But, yeah, I've been really enjoying it, and it's got a nice, you know, lick of paint on it, so it looks far prettier. I've been playing it on PC. Several mates who have been playing... Well, it's one of the most played games on my friends list on Steam. So there have been lots of people happy with that. And I've got a few friends who have also been playing it on console, and they've been, you know, really quite enjoying the experience on there. So it seems like everyone's been enjoying it, even if it is just more. And I look forward to seeing what they're going to be doing with DLC with it. And with me having the PC version, I'm looking forward to seeing what they did with mods, seeing as what some people have done with Skyrim. So yeah, it's basically Skyrim, but with laser weapons and more metal and far more wastelandy.
What did you think of the opening? Because when I watched Emily play through it to begin with, we were kind of a little bit horrified about how kind of graphic everything was, and, you know, the kind of setup was like, I mean, obviously it's kind of the end of the world type thing, but it was incredibly emotive, and that's good in a way, but also quite almost upsetting in another way.
Well, I didn't find it upsetting. I did find it very lazy.
Lazy?
Well, it's not a spoiler, seeing as it happens right at the start of the bloody game. But, well, as an example, I've been playing it as a man, and my wife has been playing it as a woman. And because we've both got our own, you know, custom characters and such. But it's basically, you have family with child and flying robot. Flying robot is left behind when nuclear war sets off. You go into the vault, your spouse is killed, and your child is stolen. And that's lazy to me. Because it's, oh, let's give you a family and then to take it away.
Okay.
So it's just, oh, I've got, you know, I'm supposed to be this angry father who's wandering the wastelands in pursuit of, you know, my little boy, Sean. I don't give a shit.
Yeah, I think that there has been a couple of people that have kind of been like, you know, the whole setup, we are meant to, you know, sympathize or, you know, empathize or whatever with the main characters, but you kind of want to do your own thing.
Yes.
So
it's I don't care. And it's not the first time I've had this. It's all through Mass Effect 3.
Hmm.
You know, when you see a small boy get killed right at the start.
Yeah.
And it's supposed to be this, you know, flashback that haunts Shepard.
Hmm.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, it's the image which is what, you know, one of the last which you know, your Shepard sees at the end of the game.
Hmm.
And it's supposed to be really emotive and, you know, packs a punch. I don't care. It's actually, you know, give me something to invest in rather than just this bit and switch. Because it said, look, you're supposed to feel something. Oh, no, something's terrible has happened.
Slight spoiler here, but, I mean, say, for example, one bit in Batman Arkham Knight, when you get, halfway through the game type thing, and then one character kind of... I won't say what happens...
it'll make me cry again. Yeah.
But that was an incredibly emotive thing because you had many conversations kind of playing through up until that point. You had,
that character helped you a lot.
Yeah, absolutely.
You were a major part of it.
You were invested in it.
Did have a
sorry.
Yeah, you know, just ... And you go, what? No.
Yeah.
They couldn't have. Mm. No. Whereas in this, it's like, oh, yeah, my life's been shot.
I mean, to a certain extent, I think...
When am I going to wander around in the wasteland?
Mm. I think it was done better in Fallout 3 when, you know, you had your father kind of helping you kind of through, your childhood and whatnot, and then all of a sudden stuff happens and, you know, you're maybe a little bit more worried about your father in that instance, because you have actually built up a relationship with him as the gamer.
It's Liam Bloody Neeson.
Best one for me, though.
You just know who you are. But he will find you.
The best one for me for an emotive trigger like that was Red Dead Redemption.
Yeah.
Right at the end.
This isn't a good sign, is it? Where we're saying all these games did it far better than this one.
That still stands out every time I think about stuff like that.
I think to a certain extent, though, I think, the immediate kind of aftermath, well, not necessarily aftermath, but while it's going on, the kind of nuclear apocalypse, in essence, I think that is a very, very scary thing. I mean, if you watch, like, videos of stuff that's meant to air during, you know, kind of a nuclear apocalypse type thing. And there is just kind of this very, very uneasy kind of creepy kind of, you know, thing about them. That it's, you know...
Well, I've said...
You know that it's, you know, not happened and, you know, what you're viewing is a just-in-case type thing. But it's just, you know, really... Yeah.
We got shown, and, of course, you know, Cookie, had this as well. We got shown in school... what would happen in the event of a nuclear war. Because the Cold War was operative at that point.
Mm. Yeah.
So we were told we would be sent home to die with family.
Yes.
Wow.
And what the local high-value target would be to move away from.
Mm.
They actually
and
showed
all these other things. Yeah.
When I was at school, they actually showed us that animation.
What, the
we
duck and cover?
We got shown threads in school.
You know that really harrowing animation of the old couple.
Oh yeah.
What is it in the wind or how the wind blows? That one we actually talked about the other week.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. The first time I ever watched that was at school.
Blimey.
As part of our
think about that. We were given that in school because that was seen as it's something that could happen.
And then they wonder why our generation is full of pacifists.
Yeah,
so, we got freaked out about fucking nuclear war.
Just because they were educated at how fucked up the planet would be and how you'd all die in the event of a world war breaking out. So it makes no sense why a lot of us are, maybe not go to war.
Yeah,
and I'm not going to reference recent things, but it's a bit fucking obvious that things like Iraq.
Yeah.
Have made things far worse.
Mm.
So, I'm not in favour of war, not because I've got flowers in my hair, but it's just in a realistic, will it help? No.
I mean, I did find that last speech from the Doctor in Doctor Who, like last week, to be incredibly, incredibly harrowing, and you know, it's won't talk about, you know, recent events because you know it's not a geek thing, but
So well, there were decades, there were generations that grew up educated of how, you know, in how shitty nuclear war would be. So yeah, nuclear war, no holiday, put it that way. But I think it's the sort of faux future 50s aesthetic, which is a nice separator. So it's past future.
Yeah.
And I think, because I was just thinking about it there, what would have worked far better for the, you know, the setup of Fallout 4 is if you'd been split up and maybe your wife and child had gone to a different vault. And then you could have searched for that vault because you'd hear, you know, they're going to, you know, vault 125. And you search for vault 125 when, you know, when you get out and you find that everyone else has been killed and, you know, you've been frozen. And, you know, maybe it's another cryo facility, but, you know, you go there and you find that, you know, something happened there.
Yeah.
Rather than the sort of very quick get them out the way. So it hardly matters. I mean, I'm following the storyline.
Yeah.
But with it being a Fallout game, just like, you know, all the other Bethesda games, you don't have to follow the main plot lines and you can go and do whatever the hell you want. And I quite like that because there are times I've been doing a mission and it's got to a point where I've thought, I'd rather be doing something else. Or, oh, hang on, I require a higher skill of lockpick or, you know, hacking. So I basically just bugger off and go and do something else that doesn't require those skills, and then they can level up a bit, get those skills, come back and resume. So it is a little bit weird that they're trying to, you know, push it along with this, you know, presumably emotive thing, but that falls flat on its ass for me. Whereas everything else about the world, it's mighty purty in a blowing up way.
Yeah.
I think I put in something like 18 hours. My wife's put in about 20 hours.
Okay.
So we're definitely getting value of money out of it. It's, and you know what? It stopped me playing Elite for a while.
Well, that is quite an achievement for a game.
There awesome. You go. But mostly because they'll be doing a beta at the end of the month where I can do planetary landings and I am going to be there.
Cool.
I'm just going to be leaving the skid marks. I know, bad imagery. No one really needs that at this point in time. But I'll be leaving skid marks on small planetoids orbiting alien stars.
You'll be leaving skid marks near Uranus. I'm sorry, it was just,
you see,
there.
You went there. I was just talking about driving around in my little moon buggy.
I'm sorry, that is pure old humour. I apologise.
No, that's normally mine.
Sometimes you just kind of have to make these jokes just to get them out of the way, just to clear the air.
If you excuse the term, I was just hanging it out there.
Oh.
For everyone to appreciate.
Okay, so what have I been up to this week? Well, have I been up to? I've been Hyrule Warriors-ing still more. Emily thinks that I'm addicted to the game.
Yes.
She might be all right.
Yes.
I've been watching a bit more Once Upon a Time.
What, are you still in the first season?
I am approaching the end of it. So it's kind of taken me a while because I kind of keep on stopping and starting. But over this weekend I just had I want something to do, stick on Once Upon a Time, and then watch an episode, stick on the next episode, and you know, I kind of binge watched most of this weekend. But you know, it's you know, like 45 minute show and like 24 episodes or so per season, so it's kind of an old fashioned, well, I'll say old fashioned, it's kind of an, you know, 90s early 2000 kind of length TV series, and it does take a while to get through.
TV series length rather than cable.
Yeah. It does take a while to get through.
Most of the things we've been watching are cable.
Yeah. But yeah, I quite like the fact that, you know, there is no because part of the problem with fairy tales and whatnot, to begin with, as we know them, at least, is that there is a bad guy and there is a good guy. But in reality, the bad guy usually has a tragic backstory. There's a reason for them being a bit nasty. And, you know, you slowly find out that all of the characters that are being a bit nasty, they have a reason for doing so.
Mm.
You know? It's not just like one day they suddenly woke up and, you know, they were horrible people who like to destroy lives. Instead, it's... In fact,
a lot of the original fairy tales were famous for that because they always give sort of reasoning.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And we've kind of distorted them in our, you know, kind of telling, like retelling of them,
yeah.
You know, to kind of try and put our own moral compass on it.
And in some cases, sanitizing or trying to make them, you know, a little bit... more acceptable. Oh, you know, best make sure that, you know, oh, hang on, no, if there's someone doing bad things, best make sure that they're just a bad person.
Mm.
Yeah. And not to be like them, because otherwise if you give them motivation and, you know, someone says, actually that makes sense. Or possibly the Blackadder's Christmas Carol theory, if anyone knows what I'm talking about.
Not quite.
Have you seen Blackadder's Christmas Carol?
Oh, I can't remember exactly.
I demand you see it this Christmas, then. Okay. Sod the New Year special thing that they did, you know, the Millennium special, bollocks to that. Watch Blackadder's Christmas Carol.
Yes.
Where it's Blackadder, who is, of course, a bastard in the rest of the series, but he's good in, you know, Christmas Carol.
Ah.
He's visited by the, you know, the ghost of... you know, Christmas past, and he's taught about you know, how bad all his ancestors were, and then he finds out in the future that if he continues being good, then he might have his own turnip.
Sorry, did you say turnip?
Turnip.
Okay.
And be Baldric's slave in the future. But if he's bad, he'd end up marrying the Empress of the Universe.
Okay.
So it's the entire, you know, it's the flip side of it's like, hang on, if I'm a bastard, I get all the cool things.
Yeah.
But yeah, anyway, carry on.
Okay. So yeah, as you kind of said,
that was relevant, you have to admit that.
Yes. So yeah, you know, fairy tales nowadays, they are completely sanitized and sometimes actually half done. In a way. So, yeah, I know you... I remember when I was a kid, I learned kind of some stories. I think, say, for example, the Three Little Pigs type thing. So, you know, obviously, three little pigs go out into the world. One builds his house of straw, the other builds his house of wood, the other builds his house of brick, and the wolf comes along, blows the first two down, and pigs run to the third, you know, brick house, and the wolf tries to blow it down, and he can't. And I think that's pretty much all that I can remember. I don't remember any other resolution type thing, but I'm pretty sure in the original fairy tales there would have been.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah. But one of the things that I do like about Once Upon a Time is that it kind of it introduces kind of characters from like fairy tales, and it has its own twist on them. So say, for example, Belle, you know, which was a recent episode that I watched, she was not necessarily kidnapped, but she was she actually willingly went with Rumpelstiltskin in order to save, you know, the kingdom of her father and whatnot.
Yeah.
Rather than, you know, kind of... And she kind of fell in love with Rumpelstiltskin, who obviously kind of, you know, is in the Beast's place. And you like get Gaston, who she was, you know, kind of organized to marry. And there seems to be a lot about like arranged marriages in the series as well so far. You know, there's kind of the will of, you know, people trying to play politics and, you know, stuff like that. And true love and whatnot kind of has to kind of try and fight for itself almost. But yeah, the twists are actually quite interesting, and, you know, actually having kind of this this before world kind of thing is also kind of intriguing, if nothing else. I think I'm running out of steam there.
I might have to actually watch that sometime.
I mean, one of the reasons why I started watching it was because it had Jennifer Morris in it. I liked her in House, you know. And I always prefer, when I'm like watching, you know, kind of a new series and whatnot, I always kind of prefer it when I recognize actors from other, you know, things.
Yeah.
Which kind of makes it a little bit, you know, more interesting, kind of judging, you know, the different characters and how they kind of, you know, are played and whatnot. Definitely. So, and yeah, it is a very interesting, you know, season so far.
This kind of reminds me of something I watched.
What's that?
An episode of Arrow.
oh no. Cookie, you're in for it.
Well,
why am I in for it?
It was the worst episode of Constantine I've seen.
You're just not happy. Just never bloody satisfied, are you?
I'd be very satisfied if it got another season. At least.
I would be as well, to be fair.
It just struck me as a little bit weird that they had this character that was not... Well, if I say adult, it sounds a bit wrong, but I'm not sure how he would really fit in with... I don't watch Arrow, but it just seemed odd.
See, because I do watch Arrow, and I've watched all the three, I've watched all seasons, I was a bit concerned about how they were going to bring Constantine into it, I must admit. That's a fair comment, because Constantine was a lot more darker. Arrow does have his darkness, though. And from the very beginning of the season, they've actually been dealing with a character who does have magical arts like Constantine.
Right.
So
they brought in fire to fight fire.
Well, Constantine was actually brought in for a totally different reason. One of the bits in the episode I quite liked was Constantine's little throwaway quip to Oliver Queen at the end of it. Metroid will know what I'm on about, so I don't want to spoil it, but he actually gave his impression of this character, and Constantine obviously knows him because he basically he gives him his sort of one sentence version of what Oliver should do.
Yeah,
as he was going to the lift. Yeah, and that's because he this character does seem to have mystical arts from the dark magic, just like Constantine sort of tends to use. So yeah, I would have actually preferred them if they did bring him in to help with this other character. But I suppose there is potential for it to happen anyway, near the end of the season. The reason they actually brought them in the reason they brought Constantine in the first place into it was a very quick way of doing it to make it sort of more of a cameo. More than anything, is more the flashbacks, how they actually met, which was what interested me. It was the island.
Yeah.
But again, you have to have been
all very cheap.
Yeah, I can see why you'd say that. Yeah, I mean the island's got a lot more secrets, which has been unfolding over the last three seasons. So it's sort of building the whole story around it. So yeah, so.
That wasn't the first time that they'd shown that island then.
No, that's where Bolivar Queen was stranded for 5 years.
All right. I have no idea who that is.
The Arrow, Green Arrow.
Right.
That's where he was actually stranded and living on his own for 5 years.
Well, see, I freely admit that I have absolutely no interest in the character at all, so it was the episode was first thing that had a struggle with me anyway. But, you know... So,
yeah, no, I know. It was... I quite liked it, though, because they got... my hopes were brought to fruition when Stephen Amell, actually, who plays Green Arrow, Oliver Queen, he actually started a Twitter thing where he said if Constantine got cancelled, he wants Constantine to join their network and have his show on there, or at least star... Yeah, guest star in one of their episodes to see how fans take it. And then he said if it did get turned into a second season of Constantine to help boost the ratings, he would go and guest star as Green Arrow in there and bring the universes together. So in a way, I'm actually quite chuffed that he's stuck to his guns and he's actually made something happen. Because that does show a bit more. You know, and the CW's made something happen on it as well. So it does show that there's popularity there for the character and for the TV series to come back.
Yes, but I'm fine with the idea of Constantine appearing on Arrow. I'm really not sure about a bloke with a glue-on mask that goes twing-twang in nightclubs appearing in an episode of Constantine if there's a new series.
Yeah. Well, he said he'd have the option of either, if it got renewed, to do that or come over to his show and guest star in that. And that's what they've done.
Well, I think it's nice that they've done it anyway.
Oh, definitely. Yeah, I'm glad they've done it. It was good to see Constantine back on the screen. That's for sure.
Just makes me think, oh, I wish there were more.
Oh, definitely. I really enjoyed Constantine, to be fair.
Okay. I don't think I'll be doing anything else. To be honest.
Fair enough.
So yeah, I think it's time to say goodnight.
Yeah, so, good night.
Wait. We have to sign off first.
Oh. Okay, sorry.
We can't just jump into bed to speak.
So it's good night from So it's good night from
It's good night from me, Paul Wood. I'm Retroid on Eurogamer.net and Super Retroid on Twitter.
It's good night for me, Paul, aka OneArmed_Cookie on Twitter.
And it's good night for me, Paul Blewett, and I'm on Twitter as @PaulBlewett. And you can find our show notes over at nerdassemble.co.uk. And we're also on iTunes and Stitcher, and you know the drill. Anyway, that's all we've got time for, so good night.
Good night.